Well, hello and happy Tuesday, and thank you all for joining us today. I am Mariana Fariña at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute, and will be your host and panel moderator today. First of all, we appreciate the many individuals at Capital Link for organizing this panel on closed-end funds. Today, we have a wonderful panel of very seasoned and knowledgeable individuals from four closed-end fund firms, and we plan to discuss key and current topics on closed-end funds. Before we jump into the very interesting discussion, I would like to ask each panelist to introduce themselves, and let's start in alphabetical order by last name. Scott Becker at Calamus, would you start, please?
All right, sounds great. Thank you, Mariana, and thank you everyone for your attendance. I'm Scott Becker. I'm the head of the portfolio specialist team at Calamus Investments. We also oversee the closed-end funds. And just by way of introduction, Calamus has seven closed-end funds that total about $9 billion. As you might expect, six of those use convertible securities in some way, shape, or form to augment what we see in the fixed income or equity markets, as well as we have one interval fund we launched earlier this year on private credit, totaling about $300 million. And then we also have an ETF that focuses exclusively on closed-end funds as well. So closed-end funds are definitely in the lifeblood of Calamus Investments.
Thank you, Scott. Naveen Stephen.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Mariana, for asking me to join this panel. Thank you to Capital Link. Great to be part of the discussion today. My name is Stephen Davis. I'm a closed-end fund product specialist at Nuveen, and my focus in this role is really supporting Nuveen's clients. And I do that by partnering with our internal sales teams and supporting them in their conversations with advisors and other professionals on all matters relating to closed-end funds. And that might be the structure, the management, or the trading of closed-end funds in the secondary market. I'm sure most of the listeners on the call will be familiar with Nuveen. Nuveen is a global investment manager with a 125-year track record of delivering income and cash flow solutions to investors across traditional and alternative investment asset classes and strategies. As it relates to closed-end funds, we currently manage 45 funds across a wide range of strategies, from municipal and taxable fixed income to real assets and equities. And I'll conclude by saying, as of the September 30th, Nuveen's total closed-end fund AUM was $54 billion.
Thank you very much, Stephen. And today we have two Stephens. So how about BlackRock, Stephen, now?
Good morning, and thank you for having me today. Stephen Menar, I manage the closed-end fund product at BlackRock. We manage about $47 billion in assets under management across 51 funds, and those strategies range from all municipals to equity and fixed income. I've been involved in the closed-end fund industry my entire career. I started out as a research analyst at Morgan Stanley. I also worked in capital markets at Morgan Stanley, launching new funds. And here at BlackRock, as the product manager, I'm focused on developing new products, continuing to develop our existing products, supporting those products in the secondary market, and also working very closely with our board.
Great. Thank you, Stephen. And last but certainly not least, Brandon.
Thanks, Mariana. I'm Brandon Odenath. I work at Cohen and Steers. Here at Cohen and Steers, we manage nine closed-end funds in total, a number of them focused on real estate securities, also some focused on preferred securities, infrastructures, global infrastructure as well. And then I spend most of my time analyzing and managing portfolios of closed-end funds. So and part of that goes into the FOF fund, the closed-end opportunities fund that we manage, which is pretty much exclusively focused on investing in listed closed-end funds. So get to see kind of closed-end funds and look at them both from kind of the manager perspective as well as from the analyst kind of buy-side perspective.
Great. Well, thank you everyone for those introductions. To our audience members, please feel free to submit your questions in the feature at the bottom of your screen, and I will do my best to weave those questions into our discussion, or if there's time, we'll discuss them at the end. So let's dive right in, and let's talk about premiums and discounts, the evaluations of closed-end funds. As hopefully everybody in the audience knows, closed-end funds are unique vehicles compared to their fund siblings due to their structure. And since the shares of closed-end funds trade on an exchange like stocks and ETFs, do not have a regular creation redemption mechanism, closed-end funds tend to trade at premiums or discounts relative to their net asset value or NAV. And sometimes these premiums and discounts may be wide, creating opportunities. And of course, the magnitude of those premium discounts fluctuates depending on different factors. So panelists, can you shed some light on this dynamic and what the current status is?
I could kick off if you like,
maybe,
Mariana.
Sure. How about this? How about Scott or Brandon, since those firms have very specific asset classes, how about we start with those, and then both Stevens go after that, since those two companies have many more exposures, because sometimes the premium discounts also depend on the exposure. So Brandon, so, since you went last on your or in your introduction, how about if you go first?
Okay, sure, thanks. So I guess we look at premiums and discounts every day as pretty much the most commonly referred to valuation metric in the closed end fund world. When we think about it at a kind of high level, we often break down the closed end fund world into three kind of major asset classes: the equity focused or stock focused closed end funds, the taxable fixed income or kind of high yield credit sensitive closed-end funds, and then the municipal bond funds. And I guess I would say across the board, all three of those groups have seen pretty significant discount tightening this year. I guess the discount tightening feels like it's been most acute or most significant in the fixed income space, probably a mix of kind of asset class or kind of macro backdrop drivers of lower interest rates, both at the short end of the curve and the longer end, kind of helping the underlying assets appreciate, and that helps investors get comfortable buying closed end funds. And then, but we've seen discount tightening in the equity funds as well. And I guess the other overlay is, of course, we'll get to this, but the kind of corporate action environment of things like rising dividend yields in different funds has also probably helped tighten in the discounts throughout the year. It's been a pretty persistent driver of a really strong year. Again, if we zoom out a little bit, the total return on our benchmark that kind of comprises all three of those asset classes is in the low 20% year to date. The entire asset class is up in the kind of mid 30s percentage points over a 1 year trailing period. And that contrasts with like a long-term kind of 20 plus year number of in the 5% range. And so this has been a pretty strong year and definitely has been aided by the kind of compression of discounts throughout the year.
Great. So as it relates to Calamos with the seven closed end funds that we have, it's a variety. We have four that are trading at premium, three that are trading at discounts. And I would say that I was honestly relatively impressed by the activity during 2022. Obviously, with the Fed raising rates, one of the benefits of a closed-end fund is its closed-end nature, the ability to use leverage as opposed to an open-end fund where flows are going to kind of potentially wreak havoc with what a portfolio manager, what we might be thinking about doing. So as rates go up, I think there's a natural inclination that rates up equals bad. Therefore, I should sell. They're not going to be able to command the same potential off of that. And that really didn't happen. And what we did see at Calamos was really a differentiation between our equity-oriented strategies and our more fixed income or credit oriented strategies. And I would say even additionally impressive was that the US based strategies saw improvements much more so than the global or even maybe the non-US focused, where I think, you know, maybe there's a bit more doubt about the relative market activity or performance of US versus non-US, which has kind of been a big theme, I think, for capital markets for quite some time now. So to me, I was relatively impressed. Having been in closed-end funds for 30 plus years now, I think early days, it kind of traded a bit more like a monolith. It didn't matter whether you were a muni fund or an equity fund. Closed-end funds just kind of seemingly did the same thing at the same time. But impressed today. And yes, we've seen some improvement here more recently. So I think people are paying attention to what's going on in the yield and the performance, and certainly as the cost of leverage environment as well.
So maybe over the cycles, the closed-end fund investor is becoming much more sophisticated and understands closed-end funds better, which is always a plus.
Absolutely.
Stephen Davis or Stephen Minar?
Sure, I'll jump in and just cover munis real quick. And I think it's important to start with the fact that, you know, closed-end funds in general are cyclical, and munis in particular have a strong correlation with interest rates. And so we saw a peaking of valuations back in 2021, and then munis had sold off as the Fed started to raise interest rates at the fastest pace in over 40 years. And so given the fact that muni closed-end funds typically are levered, higher short-term rates do increase the costs for our funds. And in certain cases, you know, that cost can actually exceed the yields that you're earning on your underlying bonds. And so that's obviously a negative for this part of the market. And so we saw a discount widening out. Also, during this time, we saw the interest rate curve flattening. And so, compressing earnings, particularly for those levered funds. And this led to a period of distribution reductions. At that point, we saw discounts really reach their highest point in the last 25 years. And they really persisted at double-digit discounts for a while. During this time period at BlackRock, our portfolio managers were proactive in addressing these dynamics in really three ways. The first of which is using that point that Scott just mentioned around the benefits of the closed structure and locking in these higher yields in this higher interest rate environment. Number two, we opportunistically reduced leverage across our platform to sell some of those lower yielding books, lower yielding bonds, and offset that negative impact of or negative carry, excuse me. The third thing that we did was across our lineup, we implemented a management fee waiver when those borrowing costs did exceed the yield on the underlying bonds, which again benefits shareholders through increased earnings. And to my understanding, I think BlackRock is actually the only issuer in the closed-end fund market that has implemented this type of fee waiver across the entire complex for our muni funds. Now turning to some more of the positives and the momentum that we're starting to see in the market today as short-term rates start to decline. Again, this is where that closed structure becomes really advantageous. Muni closed-end funds are not subject to investor flows, meaning we can continue to hold bonds with those attractive yields that we've been able to purchase in this environment. As short-term rates start to decline, our borrowing costs will start to go down as well, resulting in higher fund earnings. Just to put that in comparison to, say, a mutual fund or an ETF, when an investor buys one of those funds, the portfolio manager has to invest at the current yields, potentially diluting the fund earnings in a declining rate environment. Again, here, closed-end funds can hold those higher yields for an extended period of time, taking that long-term focus. And so as we've seen throughout history, that cyclicality of closed-end fund discounts and the use of leverage can lead to strong returns for investors. And over the past year, we've seen investment-grade muni closed-end funds returning on average 28%. That's in comparison to the muni index that's up about 10%. Finally, I think, looking outwards, I think there is still room to run for additional discount narrowing and the potential for some of these funds to return to premiums. Again, all this will be dependent on the path of interest rates going forward. If I were looking at the market today, where I see the most value is probably in the single state funds in terms of absolute levels of discounts. You know, just for an example, your tax equivalent yield for the high, you know, those investors in the highest tax brackets in California could earn yields somewhere around 11%. In New York, it's about a little over 10% today.
Right. Thank you, Stephen. How about Stephen Davis?
Yeah, I will echo what Stephen just said. You know, we've seen, you know, we track discounts very closely, and we've seen a, I think it's fair to say, a significant contraction of discounts. I think actually last time we spoke on this panel in October of last year, that was when we saw the majority of discounts within most strategies reach their sort of widest level, and it sort of coincided with price levels of funds sort of reaching their low. And since that point, sort of mid to end of October last year, we've seen discounts contract in almost all strategies. You know, if you look at each month, bar one this year, April was a slightly weaker month, but we've seen discounts contract in all of those other months. And this is a sign, of course, that, you know, money is flowing back into the space. There's increased investor demand for closed-end funds. And Stephen's right, and Scott mentioned this, you know, discounts are cyclical. And I think a lot of the compression of the discount that we've seen is, you know, closed-end fund investors trying to, you know, get ahead of that NAV rally a little bit from declining rates. The other thing I think that has driven this, and I, you know, I spend a lot of my time having conversations with advisors, and a topic that comes up is duration, and leverage typically adds duration to increases the duration of a fund versus its unlevered counterpart. And as the cycle turns, we're seeing investors looking to closed-end funds to build duration in their portfolios. And I think that's quite an interesting kind of dynamic. And, you know, we have addressed discounts like other sponsors. We've introduced an enhanced distribution policy. We may talk about this later, but that, you know, increasing distributions over a period of time has served to sort of narrow those discounts further. And so I would say that the space just, you know, it looks healthier. We're seeing demand return. We're seeing, you know, discounts come in across most strategies. You know, Stephen mentioned munis. In our monthly closed-end fund monthly market update, we track these discounts by strategy. And actually municipals have, you know, of late have actually narrowed quite significantly, particularly high yield that's come in, you know, closer to asset value. So I think this is a good thing. We're seeing demand for closed-end funds return. And as Stephen said, the environment is improving because declining rates not only help from a NAV standpoint, but reduce borrowing costs for closed-end funds that deploy leverage. And that's really been the headwind since mid-2022. It's now, or has the potential to become a tailwind and help these funds, you know, deliver better returns.
Yeah. In fact, discounts have already been narrowing, and one extra anecdotal maybe correlation to that is that the number of inquiries that we've been having on closed-end funds from our financial advisors. Brandon, is there anything else that you
want to do? I was just going to say that, you know, I think as both Stephen's kind of pointed out, that the muni funds remain at discounts to net asset value. And you know, I guess the kind of comparison to the high yield or kind of multi-sector bond type funds is that those are actually trading at premiums to net asset value in a lot of cases. And so I think that creates this kind of gravitational pull for the discounts and the muni funds to continue to tighten in. And you know, it's it's not the same asset class, it's not the same underlying exposures, but I think as closed-end fund investors kind of try to decide whether it's worth paying a 3% or 5% premium to net asset value for, you know, fund A versus this muni bond fund that I can buy at a 5% or 8% discount. Certainly some people start to make that trade-off and decide that they'd rather buy the discount. That's often, you know, when we try to think about what closed-end fund investors generally look for, it's some combination of high income and something that's trading at a discount, because you want to feel like you're getting a bargain. And so muni funds are certainly one place where you still can kind of get both those things.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone. Moving on to our next topic, leverage. And leverage has already been mentioned on some of the comments a moment ago, not surprisingly, because it's certainly a very important factor for closed-end funds. And hopefully today's comments on leverage will just simply whet the appetite of the audience to join tomorrow's Capital Link panel that is focused only on leverage. Leverage is one item for today, but tomorrow the whole website is on leverage at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And if you haven't registered, just go to capitallink.com and just register for that. So let's talk about leverage here briefly, just touch upon it more tomorrow. But can we talk about maybe levels of leverage? Stephen, you mentioned something about reducing the amount of leverage. How about taxable versus muni cost of borrowing? How about fixing the borrowing cost versus floating? Let's talk about that. Anyone?
Yeah, I can start. I'll just say, you know, at Calamos, we use a mix of loans and MERPs, the mandatory redeemable preferreds. Much like any other investing, we think diversification is important. I think as others have said, leverage is an opportunity. It's not a mandate. So therefore you should move it as you see fit. And, you know, obviously as investors, we're pleased to see the cost of borrowing come down. And most of the game of investing is, can you earn a spread, right? What, you know, my cost of capital versus my return on capital. We do that in the names we invest in. We would like to do that with our closed-end funds as well. So to us, it's about diversification and about being more opportunistic than kind of necessarily just dogmatic about there's only one way to do it.
Great. And just for the audience, you mentioned two types of leverage at the beginning. I believe one is floating and the other one is more fixed, just so exactly. That the audience can understand that.
Exactly. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
I can go next if you like,
yes.
Mariana.
Yes, Stephen. Sure.
You know, like I said in my previous, you know, comments that, you know, leverage has been this sort of headwind. We're seeing it, you know, become a tailwind. I think it's important to remember that, you know, over the long term, the application of leverage has resulted in higher total returns for shareholders. And you know, closed-end funds are very well suited for leverage. The steady asset base, the fact that, you know, unlike an open-ended fund where assets are moving up and down in response to investor flows, the steady asset base of closed-end funds mean that they can, if they use leverage, can deploy more leverage. And as Scott said, that spread now between where we borrow and where we can invest those funds has the potential to widen, and that will be beneficial for closed-end funds. At Nuveen, we have a 20-strong team that manage our approximately $20 billion in leverage, and our goal is to, constantly look at the best counterparties to achieve the best rates, and diversify that leverage across different sources, you know, all with the goal of increasing our income that we can deliver to shareholders. So we've seen leverage ratios actually tick down a little bit as NAVs have moved higher. You know, our leverage is pretty I would say reasonably conservative. We maintain bands, internal bands, to make sure that we don't reach higher levels. We may trim leverage at certain points. But I think, you know, like I said before, I think leverage is a long-term application. And I think for investors in our funds, we're going to see leverage, become more accretive and turn into a tailwind, within a declining rate environment.
Anyone else? Yeah, I'll finish on this topic by saying clearly more than 20 years ago, I would say that leverage was managed somewhat passively, kind of on autopilot. That's very different these days. Now leverage is very actively managed. And I know by all these firms, very, very actively managed was the best tool to use leverage for the benefit of the common shareholder. So that is something that over the last 2 decades has changed substantially. Just the fact of different types of leverage is in the past, it was easy, just one or two. Now it's much more complicated, much better, I think, much more active. All right, unless any other comments on leverage, we'll leave it for tomorrow, for the webinar tomorrow. Moving on to kind of our next topic is corporate actions. There are more corporate actions these days than there have been in the past few decades, I would say, and all sorts of corporate actions, from conversion to ETFs, conversion to interval funds, mergers, tenders, increases, and I would say meaningful increases in distributions, acquisitions of smaller closed-end funds by one established closed-end fund managers, and also takeover by a closed-end fund activist. So let's talk about this, maybe causes, triggers. Stephen Minar, would you like to start on that?
Sure, Mariana. And I'll focus really on what we've been doing to address discounts in this period since 2021, where, again, those valuations peaked and we started to see wider discounts over the past 3 years. And those three initiatives are one, managed distributions, two, open market share repurchases, and then three, discount management programs. So on the first one, managed distributions, and Stephen from Nuveen talked about this a little bit earlier. I think closed-end fund investors, first and foremost, are often looking for income from these products. But it's not just about the level of the income. It's also about the stability of that income over time. And so a managed distribution allows a fund to pay that attractive and stable level of cash flow paying out net asset value essentially every month and aligning that with your total return profile for the fund. And so historically, if we look back in time, managed distributions were really applied to primarily equity strategies where you had that capital appreciation component. However, in 2019, we at BlackRock extended this program to cover our taxable fixed income funds as well. At that time, the average discount on our funds was about 10% across these eight funds. I would say today, those have all returned to premiums, an average of a 2% premium, with seven of the eight funds trading at a premium to NAV. And again, I think this can be attributed to that consistency of the distribution, in addition to that higher level of yield that we've been paying out to investors every month. The second topic is open market share repurchases. And so what a fund can do is actually use capital, use its own capital to buy its shares back in the open market. This provides additional demand, but it also allows us to then redeem those shares at net asset value. And that difference between where we buy those shares and the NAV of the fund is added back to the fund, and that's called NAV accretion. So for example, if a fund trades at $9 per share in the open market, but its NAV is $10, every share that we buy back will add a dollar back to the value of the portfolio. And so over the past few years, we've been very aggressive in buying back shares at these higher discount levels. In total, over time, we've bought back about $1.3 billion across our complex. Those repurchases have added over $210 million in value to shareholders across those funds. Now, the third program is discount management program. So a discount management program looks to provide liquidity to shareholders at or close to NAV when a fund's discount exceeds a prescribed level. So to use an example, in 2024, we implemented discount management programs across all of our equity and allocation funds. And the way that this works is on a quarterly basis, we'll take a look at what is the average discount for each of those funds. And if it exceeds 7.5%, then we'll go and the fund will buy back up to 2.5% of its shares outstanding, essentially providing up to liquidity at NAV each year.
Great. Thank you very much, Stephen. Stephen Minar. Anybody else on these comments on these corporate actions? Stephen Davis,
yeah,
I think, or Brandon?
Yeah, sorry to jump in there.
Go ahead. This is a conversation.
Yeah, I would just say from kind of an investor perspective, all of these different types of corporate actions are kind of great opportunities for active management in the space. I think, you know, a lot of times this is closed-end funds are a small slice of people's portfolios. Maybe oftentimes it's also kind of you buy things to kind of clip the coupons, if you will, or get the income and maybe not watch it as closely. But for those of us that are watching it closely, it's provided a lot of great opportunities, whether that's participating in things like tender offers or kind of being able to react to changes in distribution policy, because those changes in policy do tend to have lasting effects on how particular funds or groups of funds trade. And so I think it's been a fun, exciting time for investing in the space. And again, we kind of talked about this at the outset, but I think all of these corporate actions, if you kind of were to put them all together, even though they're individual decisions by boards and managers, put together, I think it's helped provide a bit of a tailwind for the space, in addition to the kind of interest rate environment that's been more conducive for levered funds. So, you know, it all kind of blends together and it's hard to disentangle the two, but definitely has been a tailwind for discounts in the space this year.
Yeah, I can chime in here, Mariana. We have also looked to address discounts, and we want to make sure that we sort of control those discounts, and we have been pretty successful in bringing these discounts in through an enhanced distribution policy. We changed our distribution policy late last year for a number of funds, and have made a series of distribution increases. And that's, you know, as I said before, that's really served to increase demand and narrow discounts, and we found that to be effective. Stephen mentioned share buybacks, which are, again, are accretive and they're effective. And we have, you know, used that tool as well, providing a sort of floor for discounts, standing ready in the market to buy back shares at certain levels. But it's really been these distribution increases that Nuveen has enacted, as have other sponsors, and I know Stephen at BlackRock has done that too. We've done that too, and it's really helped, bring in these discounts, and that's been the most effective tool. So you know, we're happy that's been able to address these discounts.
Yeah, I would agree that they've been effective. They touch all the shareholders at the same time,
right.
And people notice. They clearly notice when the distribution is increased, especially if it's meaningful.
Right.
Any other comments before we move on to the next the next topic and final topic? Okay, let's move on to maybe Outlook. And here we have a few themes in terms of Outlook, if we have enough time. Let's start with IPOs, initial public offerings, new closed-end funds. And Brandon, maybe before we can look forward, can you take us back a little bit about Structure 2.0?
Sure. Yeah, happy to kind of kick things off there. I guess maybe the bit of background worth mentioning is that starting in 2019 or late 2018, after a number of years of closed-end fund primary market or IPOs pretty much being closed or shut, there was a somewhat new, or what's old is new again, kind of structure that got created, which we'll refer to as the closed-end fund 2.0 structure, just for simplicity's sake. And really the maybe the main points that I see on this new structure was that the issuer or the investment manager would pay for the underwriting fees. And what that meant was that it was effectively like cutting out the kind of upfront fee. And that meant that all of the net assets would go to work and be invested right away, as opposed to some of them going to pay the underwriters. And then the other important feature here was that in this 2.0 structure, they were issued with terms or kind of a limited term or an expiration date, if you will, where it was somewhere between often 7 and 13 years. And that meant that at the end of the term, that the fund would effectively wind up, or at least offer to tender the entire fund. And you'd be able to get your money back at NAV as a shareholder, even if that was a number of years down the road. I think that structure helped get investors and underwriters and everyone kind of comfortable with issuing new funds. We subsequently had a nice kind of period of new funds being issued. Maybe that those 2.0 funds certainly sowed some seeds of opportunity as an investor, because many of them got issued right into the face of the pandemic, and then rising inflation, rising interest rates, and subsequently a lot of those funds traded off and became good buying opportunities for a secondary market investor. But nonetheless, that's kind of the backdrop and the experience of the last 5 or 6 years or so.
Thank you, Brandon. Any other mm-hmm. comments on maybe Outlook? Anybody there to Outlook on IPOs?
I might just add to what Brandon just said. I think we're going to see the sector continue to evolve in terms of features that potentially limit the discount or control the discount going forward. It's an investor and shareholder concern. I think we're likely to see term features feature in new IPOs. You know, something that's quite different from our market versus the UK investment trust market. In the UK, shareholders have and investors in new funds have demanded more in terms of discount control, whether that's mechanisms that limit the discount to a certain level, a bit like the tender offers that Stephen Minar just mentioned, or even a mechanism that should the fund trade beyond a certain discount, that may trigger even a wind up or a continuation vote, where a vote is put to shareholders on the continuation of the company. I think that in our market, we may see that happen. We may see more discount control, but we have to acknowledge that, you know, those have sort of structural implications for the fund. You know, tenders can shrink the fund. They can result in, less liquidity for ongoing shareholders. They can result in higher costs. And so that has to be weighed up. And at the end of the day, you know, closed-end funds are designed to be permanent capital vehicles that can invest in long-term term assets. But I think we're going to see, you know, more evolution. Maybe we'll call it 2.5 or 3.0. I don't know, but I think we're going to see sponsors react to shareholders' concerns about discounts. And I think it's a balance between, you know, not taking this structure, which is a fantastic structure and designed for long-term income shareholders, with the fact that the discount, you know, has to be, or shareholders want that discount to be to some extent controlled.
Thank you. Scott, is there anything that you would like to, or Stephen?
I think some of the changes that we've seen more recently are certainly the closed-end market being very well and very attuned to what, you know, the opportunity set is and trying to create the proverbial win-win. And I think looking at those terms and giving people kind of an exit point where they at least have some level of certainty as to this premium discount should be at NAV. It should be even. I have exit points ahead of me. And as Stephen just said, these are meant to be long-term investment vehicles. That's the benefit of a closed-end format, is not to have daily trading in and out affecting a portfolio manager's decisions and incurring more turnover and potentially more fees, et cetera. So I think the advent of the extended term, I think the intervals, you know, are allowing people to use perhaps less liquid securities, but providing some level of liquidity to that investor, which is exactly what I would want as an individual investor. Give me access to things that maybe I don't want to do on my own, but I'm willing to have a professional and an active manager do that for me, but give me some measure of confidence that I'll be able to step out along the way should something change in my time horizon or my risk appetite, et cetera. And those, we know those things do happen. So I applaud the closed-end industry for kind of acknowledging some of these things and finding what I think are better solutions for the investors.
And just to be very, very clear for the audience, Scott, you mentioned that for investors to allow to step out, they can do that any single time on the exchange. They Absolutely. May not get the NAV that they want, but I just want to be very clear on that.
No, it's a very strong point. You're right. So you know, that is one of the advantages of a closed end relative to an open end, right? You have minute by minute liquidity in a closed end fund, where the open end fund is at the end of the day. And, you know, you put your trade in the morning and you kind of hope that at the end of the day, you got the same price, but maybe you didn't. So yeah, point very well taken.
Stephen?
Sure, I'll come in here. So I think ultimately, you know, the level of discounts across the closed-end space are going to be the trigger for a reopening of the IPO market. And we're starting to see, as we've talked throughout this discussion, discounts coming in. I'm actually quite surprised we haven't seen an IPO really in the fixed income space, because as Brandon pointed out earlier, a lot of those funds are actually trading at significant premiums. We have seen a few, mostly CLO equity and very small deals. So not the traditional IPO that you see in this market. But I do think we're starting to see the early signs of a thawing of the IPO market. I think also going back to the 2.0 structure, this the payment of the fees up front was a significant hurdle that was removed for the investor. And actually, I think a lot of people forget that these IPOs typically traded up post the IPO versus historically one of the, you know, the main risks post that IPO was that they were going to trade down and you need to stabilize that price. And so again, removing those fees that were previously incurred by investors was a significant improvement on the structure. And I actually put it into, put in a quick example, we've launched products called Target Term Trusts. So this is a municipal offering where it simply acts, looks and acts like a bond, but it's a diversified portfolio. So it launches, say, at $25 at IPO. The goal is to deliver an income stream along the way and then pay back that $25 at the termination. And, removing the fees up front makes these products like the Target Term Trust a much more effective product, because in the prior version where you had those upfront fees coming out of the fund, you'd have to recoup that essentially by withholding income from investors over time. Whereas here, again, you start at $25 on the NAV and the market price. And so there's no hurdle to, you know, recoup that income over time. And so I think, again, this 2.0 structure is certainly an improvement for the space. The last thing I would say is, we've talked a lot about discount controls, and I think that's a good way to kind of talk about discounts, is that you're never going to eliminate the discount, right? But you can mitigate the discount through a lot of the actions that we've talked through throughout this call about. The one thing I do want to caution is, and I think Scott and both Stephen, you know, mentioned this, is that you also have to focus on what's in the underlying portfolio and how much liquidity you can offer. In some of our recent IPOs, we've been seeking to democratize access to things like private equity. Well, private equity investments have a long investment horizon, typically, you know, 5+ years. And so the more liquidity you provide, that changes the allocation of the portfolio. And so you can end up in a situation where privates, which were initially meant to be only 25% of the portfolio, maybe, you know, over time get closer to 50% of the portfolio. And that changes the risk dynamic for the client. And so I think, again, it's a balance of discount mitigation with the long-term focus of the closed-end vehicle.
Thank you, Stephen. And with that, hopefully the audience, it is very clear to the audience that each of us are extremely passionate about closed-end funds and love the vehicle. And we could be talking here for more hours, but we want to be respectful of your time. And I see that the time is up. So thank you very much to Capital Link for organizing this webinar. And thank you so much to Scott, Stephen, and Brandon for being wonderful panelists. And have a great day with that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mariana.
Thank you.